Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 1, delivered on August 20th.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Professor Alan Kring. You can call me Professor Kring or Professor C. I call you Mr. or Ms., as the case may be, or vague as it may be. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Fall Semester 2019. Start off with just the basics. I'm going to have some expectations of you. Read this syllabus. You're responsible for knowing what's in it. Don't blow off the syllabus here in this class. Just to give you a little bit of a background first, I am loud and aggressive, and I will walk right up to you, and I will ask you questions. I anticipate that you will be able to give me answers. Don't just pretend that you don't know. I won't take that. I will just keep pressing with you. During the course of this semester, you will have lots of lecture notes to take. I prohibit the use of computers and smartphones in this classroom unless you're directed. So if you have one, put it down. My assistant will go around and ask you once nicely, and then I will make it very uncomfortable for you. No computers and no smartphones. That's weird when you're sitting there trying to text and pretend you're not. Yeah, you're going to use an ancient technology called writing. Now, you are college students in the College of Business. We are a ranked business school in the top 100 in the nation among more than 3,000. So the expectations of you are high here, and I maintain those high expectations in this classroom. Sometimes I'm going to give you just poor lecture at you. You will also have other types of learning materials. But let me go through it first of all. Academic integrity. Don't cheat in my class. You have online homework, and there are places where you can pay people to do your online homework. I can find those places because they're stupid enough to use VPNs that I can cut right through. Don't try that. Don't cheat that way. Don't cheat in any way. Your professional standards, as I said, we've got to make you the representatives of a ranked business college, so that means that it's a little tougher here and it's a little more formal in some ways. Now, my office hours are on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 to 2, and Wednesdays from 11:30 to 1. If you can't make those hours, just tell me and I'll find some other accommodation for you. Send me email, and if you have a question, send it through your official university account, because I won't answer it if you send it through something like Gmail or Hotmail or something like that, because I can't authenticate. There's no way I can know who you are. And some hacker could be trying to get your credentials by using me, and so I can answer you only if you use your official at ilstu.edu. Course materials, you're going to buy an access code from Cengage Unlimited. And you have to buy it. You can't share a book or anything like that, which some students thought they could do. It's not that expensive. It's about $119. And that gets you your e-text and all of your online resources. And it's not a bad deal. Now, if you're like me, I like a physical book. You can get that for a little more if you want a book that goes with it. When you register with Cengage, go through ReggieNet here to do the to access and get your registration and set up and all that. Make sure you use the same name in Cengage that you see being used as your name in ReggieNet, in other words, university records. Otherwise, I'm having to find and correct a lot of errors that pop up when I transfer scores from one to the other. You can read the course competencies. Actually, they won't really mean a lot until you've seen what we mean by things like capital structure, capital management, risk and return, all that. But know this. Online, here's the breakdown. Online homework. Every chapter has a homework assignment with it. Now, you do the homework. When you do it, you can try three times in each section of each homework, and only your best try counts. And then you grade it now, and that finalizes, locks down. At the along the way, I drop your three lowest homework, full homework scores. So if you miss a deadline, I don't give any kind of makeup or extensions, and I'll mention the exceptions to that. So if you miss a deadline, you miss it. That means you get started early. This week is chapter one. Chapter one will be due as per the schedule, which is in the overview. If you look down here at the bottom, chapter one, which I cover this week, is due 1 week later, September 1. Just don't get behind. You have an extra week after lectures are finished to get your work done, so you should not fall behind at all. Moving down back down here. Now, there will be three cumulative online exams, chapters 1 through 4, 5 through 8, and 9 through 12. Those are in there as well. And you do those after you finish chapters 1 through 4. You can do the cumulative exam. And those count for a quarter of your grade. Now, you're going to have pop quizzes in class. I don't announce them. If you're here, you're here. I drop your three lowest scores. So if you miss a quiz, don't send me an email like, I know you said not to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you anyway if I can make up that quiz. Don't do that. You get a zero, you get a zero. Corporate America is not going to wait for you to come back and give you a replacement project to do if you miss the deadline for a project. And I've got to make sure that you know that from my class onward, you don't get makeups. Now, the exceptions are to that: university-sponsored events, military obligations, and first responders. Those are the exceptions I give and inform me. Of those, if you have one of those. Now, the in-class exams, there's a midterm and a final. Those are based on the lectures. Now, in my lectures, I fill in a lot of details that the book misses. And so the exams might have book material, but I won't ask you anything on an exam that I didn't cover in class. Brief little thing here. Once in a while, the book and I disagree on something. If the book and I disagree, ma'am, who's right? Yeah, that wasn't a pause. You should not pause. Okay? So, and there will be a few times in here when that happens, but, you know, for the most part, finance is a science, and it's just a matter of interpretation a lot of times. Know my expectations of you in this class. I anticipate that you're going to be here every day. You're not going to blow off this class. I guarantee you, if I see seats empty, that's a pop quiz just begging for me to throw up that day. And you'll say it. You'll say that really sounds like it. Late work, don't ask. And like I said, don't send me an email about weird stuff like, well, I really have a good excuse for missing that exam. I was, you know, like killed in an accident. Show me the death certificate. Maybe. But even there, I'll be a little bit tough on it. I get strange email from students. Like, the one that bothers me the most is someone late in the semester is not doing well. Well, I have to get an A in this course. You know, what do I look like? The Make-A-Wish Foundation? No. Do not record a lecture. I am podcasting these lectures, and I'll show you that in a minute. Photographing recording or portable devices to capture images. And one thing that's amazing, I'll write all this stuff on the board, and then sure enough, someone's trying to sneak a cell phone up and take a picture of it instead of writing it down. You know, really? You lazy SOB. Disabilities, the accommodations. If you have an accommodation, email me your card. And I will make the arrangements for the accommodation. Again, Cengage, go in there, get the materials, get them soon. You've got a 2-week grace period. If you're short on cash right at this moment, but the grace period ends rock solid in 2 weeks. So you can get started right away, whether you can afford it or not to pay for it tonight. ReggieNet. ReggieNet is an abomination hated by God. However, it is our ReggieNet. And so there will be resources in there. So you have, and that's how you go to your Cengage stuff, is through ReggieNet. Don't go into Cengage.com on your own. Just go in through ReggieNet, and you'll pop right into where you need to be. Now, other resources, I'll be giving you other places, links in ReggieNet in the resources tab that I'll be having you read, or supplemental materials on something I've talked about in class, or I've shown you a website that you should go to. Know this, I am not a PowerPoint professor. I do not sit here, click, click. I talk right at you, and I look you right in the eye, and I expect you to be able to do the same to me. And if I ask you your name, you give it to me as Mr. or Ms. We're not on a first name basis here. So know that everything is formal in this classroom, and I am, fortunately, I'm the best teacher you'll ever have, and that helps a lot. Get a TI-83 or 84. Now, there, you can download a virtual one to your computer. So if it's a day when we are doing something on computers like Excel, or you need a calculator, by all means, open up your computers for that session. The online virtual TI calculator is free of charge, and it's just excellent. It's exactly like the real one. It does have a few problems. Now, a few of you have Macs, and I'm sorry for you for that. You should have been brought up better. But the virtual emulator TI-83-84 can have problems with the Mac, running on the Mac. Otherwise, come with paper, pencil, a straight edge, and such materials as that in this class, and write like there is no tomorrow, because I am pouring material at you. I am getting you ready for a world that is a lot darker than it has been in literally almost a century. We're going to drop into a recession that will be terrible within the next year. You are also up against the most vicious competitors you could imagine. You have to be better than the Chinese, the Japanese, the Indians. You have to be better than the cutthroats in Europe. And I got to make you that. I can't protect you, but I can prepare you for it. And I'm not joking about that. Let me give you a little bit of background about me. I left high school, started college, flunked out of college, joined the Army. It was fun. I got to kill people. I came back out of the Army with an honorable discharge, and at Ohio State, I traveled as a gospel evangelist for a while, which is where I get, sometimes you'll hear a cadence in my voice. Never did get rid of that, and it works sometimes. And then I taught at Ohio State until the end of the 1980s. I taught finance, economics, and other subjects. And then I was a consultant while I was still being a professor. I've taught English, marketing, accounting. God, what else have I taught? Seems like a court reporting, transcription and proofreading. And along the way, I was also a business consultant. I'm going to tell you a lot of stories from the world of business consulting. I stayed in there until I got in too much trouble working with the very wrongest kind of people you can imagine. And the deal is I stay away from anything in that world, and they don't finish the problem that they had with me. I am also, in my other life, I run a business. I'm a professional artist and professional artist and photographer. I own a corporation, a closed corporation called Emergent Light Studio. And I'll show you my financials. And I'll make sure that you know that when I tell you about business, I am a professor who actually runs a business. I am on my, after a year of struggling, I was given a storefront on Amazon.com, the first independent artist that they had done that before they would accept those kinds of that kind of stuff, only through art brokers and agents and through galleries. So I'll show you that site. No, you can't buy my art. One, you can't afford it. And two, I'd hate to see it hanging in your hovel. I'm trying to think if there's something else I want to tell you about this. Over here, just really quickly, just so you see it, the send gauge, it'll take you in through send gauge, and you can see the layout of the, really, go to this view, and you'll see week by week, you'll see all of this practice material that you can use, videos, and then on assignments, there it is. This is due, unlocks on the 25th of August. Actually, I should unlock before then. I got to change that. But it's due on September the 1st, and you just hammer through it section by section. If you want to do a section over to get a better grade, you can actually click, how do I do this? And it'll take you to the e-text to show you right where it's shown, taught to, how to do this. Essentially, this is where you can get your gravy for your mashed potatoes. A good high score in this section of the course helps you with your overall grade for the course. And it's just that way. It's consistent from one to the next. And then there are the cumulative exams. As you can see, that one pops open, unlocks on the 22nd, and then it's due on September the 30th. Now, the primary reason that I don't open all of the assignments up right away is because that's how the services work. You buy for about, I guess the running thing for a Russian helper is $800 American, and they'll just go in there one night and do all of the assignments. I used to see that. It blew me away. This is a genius. Wow. Oh, this is someone else doing the work. So I open them up. That would make it more tedious for the hacks to do this for pay. And yes, you can find them. Yes, I can find them, too. And then, of course, you'll have all of this stuff that'll be filling in the grade book, too. The scores in Cengage are authoritative until the end of the course when I transfer everything over to ReggieNet, where you see your final course grade and all that. Anyway, enough of that. Closing that out. I don't know why it keeps doubling. What do you mean I've logged out? Well, okay. Anyway, let me take you over. Now, I podcast all of my lectures, so you can listen to my podcasts at any time. No, they are not in the illinoisstate.edu system. It is my own website. Now, let me get out of here, log out, and here it is, isu-prof.com. This is one of my private education websites. Now, there's a Flash player here, but they won't install Flash on these computers because they think it's dangerous, because Google told them it's dangerous. But anyway, this is spring semester. And every lecture for every section of 240 is there. And if you have Flash installed, you can just play it on a Flash bar right here. The whole lecture is right there. Otherwise, you can click here, and it will download the lecture to your computer, and you can play it on your default audio device, which is probably Windows Media Player, or if you've got a Mac, it's probably QuickTime. So that's that. Now, starting many years ago, I was one of the first podcasters that Apple iTunes accepted for podcasting through iTunes. I had to meet their code requirements, the structure of the background information, so their spiders know where to find it and what it is. And if you go to Apple iTunes, there it is. Now, they were, all of them for many, many years, both here and other places. My computer just turned. Oh, okay. Okay, now it aggregates the last 10 that are displayed, and then it archives anything before that. So what you're seeing are the last 10 from last spring right now. Once I've put up the podcasts from today's lectures in the two sections of 240 I'm teaching here, the spiders will find it. Sometimes it just amazes me. They find it within minutes and it's here. Other times the spiders take maybe 24 hours. So if I process these in post-production tonight and get them up tomorrow, you'll probably see them here on iTunes sometime tomorrow. So they're available here on iTunes free of charge under the album Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. That's another resource that's available to you. What else would I say? Okay. Now, this is my private website, creepy ass as it is, but there are some resources here, very good links, which we'll use in the class from time to time. Now, over here, this is your assignment. This is what you're doing for this week. Now, here's a scrolling marquee for special notices or special links. Like if I were killed in a car accident, I'd put it up here and tell you when we were going to start meeting class again. In hell. Now over here, for years I was a writer of academic, educational, social, and political commentary articles. These links are now dead because I offended the pigs of Anonymous. I think I call them pigs. And so they destroyed my website. Fortunately, everything I wrote is in the Wayback Machine, and I'm rebuilding it. But these are dead links right now. I'll give you the links to some of the Wayback Machine images of them so you can read them because they're relevant to this class. Also, I have even a game room. You don't need to go anyplace else. You can stay here all day. You can play games. Bowling Master, Mahjong, Mad Cow. You know, I probably should get rid of this Where's Osama. Really? I still got that up. Well, hell. Awkward. Haven't updated this site in quite a while, you can tell. Let me get out of that for a little bit here. Again, I am loud. I'm aggressive. If I haven't offended you by the end of this semester, I haven't done my job. This is old school academia. No computers. Just straight up lecture, discussion. If you're a leftist or a right winger, I guarantee you I'll offend the hell out of you in this course. If you love yourself some of these left-wing socialists in Congress, or if you're a drooler over Donald Trump, I'll cut you down in this class. This is objective. This is not the subjective world of your feelings. Like I said, you're going into a really dark world, and it's going to be one where you take feelings, set them to the side, and you trust my process because I make you good. Now, every class after this one, I'm going to open the class with a look at the screens. I'm going to teach you how to read stock market and bond markets. I'm going to teach you what the numbers mean, and it's going to become second nature to you. So you don't have to take other people's word for authority. Far too many people use resources on the web like that Wikistupedia, which is one of the worst possible sites a person could use. But they trust it. They believe because it's easy to find things there. That's the same and true in the financial world. These financial news networks and these geniuses that give their investment advice, it just makes us shake our heads. They should not say that to people. And yet they do. I'm going to teach you how to think for yourselves. First, I'm going to teach you how to think in the box, because thinking out of the box doesn't do you any good if you don't know what's in the box. And I'm going to proceed from there. Now, I will show you the screen so that you become more knowledgeable, empowering yourselves to be able to make good investment decisions. Because sooner or later, you're going to be making investments, not just for yourself, which I don't care how much money you lose when it's for yourself, but when it's for your family, for your company, for a pension fund, Those kinds of things, yeah, I do care about you knowing what to do right there. And so if you think you're an investment genius because you've been doing Robinhood or some other stupid-ass service, I will make sure you know just why you were being a fool. You see, I come from, well, I grew up country, and then I was grew up war, and then I grew up in the Wall Street family of people. We love stupid investors. Your retirement plan is, for us, an extra martini at lunch. Your life savings is a couple of extra nights at a five-star hotel. You see, that's how we live our lives, is by taking advantage of people like you. Why? Because we can. We wreck companies because they are wreckable, because they didn't think far enough ahead to stop us. I need to make sure that you understand that's the basis of business. This whole idea about stakeholders and loving Mother Earth, great stuff. But at the end of the day, you answer to the owners, and the owners are greedy. Know this, in our world, greed is good. Greed works. Among the great systems of the world, socialism, communism, binary system, capitalism is the engine that brought us to where you are now, where we can sit on our fat asses in a first world country. And yes, I teach in second world countries. I just got back 2 days ago from Central America. They are learning the lessons themselves now. We're failing, and so the money from China, Japan, Canada, Europe, Russia is flowing to that country because they are not afraid. And I've got to get you fearless. Not just saying, no limits, man. I got to make sure that you really are fearless. Greed works. Let me explain to you. You, sir, are a bread maker. You make bread. Now, there's no other bread maker anywhere near you in the village. So you have a spatial monopoly. You can charge very high prices. Okay, that's wonderful. But that means that you don't have to control your costs. You're putting flour, pouring it into this thing, and you miss. Oh, well, I'll just charge more for the bread. You hire your lazy-ass brother who sits in the basement eating Cheetos and playing World of Warcraft all day. Really? World of Warcraft? That's what old people play. Now, Call of Duty, that's where it is, okay? You don't have to be efficient with your resources because you can charge whatever. Now, somewhere in that village, there is going to be someone who notices you. Sir, have you ever seen one of those people who really, really doesn't deserve to be rich? Yeah. Some loser who's ugly, who has no real personality, but he's driving a really nice car. He's got a really nice looking girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. And he is really, really, you know, not deserving of it. He really needs to die. Somewhere in the village is a person who will say, I can charge a lower price just by not wasting my resources, by driving the efficiency of my no change in machinery or people, just don't waste resources. And you can charge a lower price. That is called static efficiency. Using the existing technology, but using resources as efficiently as possible. That's static efficiency. And if you're not writing, you are wrong. Everything I say has meaning, even when it doesn't seem like it does, even when I don't think it does. Static efficiency. Now, here's the thing, though. You, madam, see him now making money. Look at this guy. Does he really deserve to be rich? Absolutely not. I mean, he doesn't use a good shampoo on his hair. Look at that hair. Dry and fly away. Now, this is Butch, okay? Bruh. Okay. Now, but you're thinking, wait a minute. They're still using those old grinding mills for the wheat, and they're still using people to knead the bread dough. I mean, I could develop some machines that would, motors that would move that dough and do that a lot cheaper than people can. And I mean, those old grindstone mills, I mean, I could get something that would, you know, just mash that hard grain up a lot faster and cheaper. And I could save money, and I could then charge a lower price. That's called dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency is changing the technology to reduce costs. Dynamic efficiency, changing the technology to reduce the cost. Now, they use this word technology in your time in the most ridiculously narrow way. When they talk technology now, all they're talking about is electronics. Technology in your home, technology in your car, technology in your ass. No, technology is merely the way you combine the factors of production to create output. Technology is merely the way you combine the factors of production to create output. So here's an interesting thing, though, about this process in capitalism. You, sir, did not start to make the bread cheaper. You did not charge a lower price because you loved your customers. You didn't give a rat's butt about them. You wanted their money. And the way you could do it was by taking those customers away from that lazy man. And the same is true of you. We can all say we love our customers. They are the heart of our business. We say that. That's marketing. But if you don't make a buck off them, you hate them. I guarantee you, the first time your customers let you down by going to buy something at another store, you're not going to love those customers anymore. You're going to call them every name in the book. Look at those sons of bitches over there. Okay? In other words, your goal in driving your costs down was not to benefit your customers. They did, but it's because you were greedy and you, madam, were even greedier. Your job was to drive him out of business, make his life a living hell of bankruptcy, and force their kids to go to Illinois Wesleyan University instead of Illinois State University. Oh, I will so edit that out of this. Do you understand that by the very process of enlightened self-interest, we create a better world for all of us? Make no mistake about it. Business world, success is oftentimes the result of unethical, illegal, and just pure hateful behavior. Some of those people who are the heroes and the icons of the business world, men like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, George Soros, Donald Trump, they are nasty human beings, and in many cases they broke laws, destroyed lives in their path to their own self-interest. Don't do that in my path. I'll win. And I make sure that you know not to let those people walk over you, and don't idolize them. No matter what the media says about those kinds of heroes, the lives that they destroyed in their path, the laws that they broke, that's just not happening under my watch, guarantee you. Where was I? Oh, now here's an interesting question I'm going to pose to you. Sir, what is business? I mean, you're in a college of business, majoring in a business degree. What is business?
Running a company to make money.
Running a company to make money. Well, what do you mean running? Is that like, go company, go, go. Running. What is running?
Managing and making decisions.
Managing and making decisions. you're going to go far because that's what they do in the sky clouds. At the base level, business is altering resources to provide goods and services to end users. That's all. A business can be informal. You could watch houses, and that's a business. You could walk dogs and cats. Okay, you drag cats. You don't walk cats. I'm a cat person, so bite me if you are not. You could, deal crack on a street corner. Yeah, you could. Yeah. That neck beard, yeah. I razz people. You know I love you. I don't, but you can pretend. Marketing. It's all about marketing. Business can be as informal. Most of the, by far the vast majority of all businesses, both now and all through history, have been completely informal affairs where there wasn't any structured organization. It was just someone making money or a couple of people making money for themselves. And when they died, the business died. Those are called sole proprietorships and partnerships. I'll get back to those in a little bit. It can be a highly informal affair. Or it can be structured like a corporation. The businesses that I created in my life, most of them started out as just, I'm just going to call myself a name. I got a fictitious name approval through the state. As a matter of fact, this company that I now have run for quite a few years, Emergent Light Studio, it was nothing but a fictitious name. It was me. I was the company. It was only later that in 2012 that I turned it into a formal thing that now gets taxes, has to pay taxes of all kinds, gets probed for compliance with regulations. It's now a corporation, and it has been for some years now, too. But at first, most companies really do start just as a one-person show or a several-person show, and that's it. And then they move on from there. Sometimes they never do. They just stay an informal thing there forever. As part of doing the work that I do as an artist means going to art shows, art festivals, putting up all this massive stuff, setting it up, and then sitting there hoping someone will buy my stuff. And there are all of these people around there. Very few of them are corporations. As a matter of fact, one of the, you're with all the other gypsies, tramps, and thieves, and you'd be setting up this big, huge mobile home would come up, and these kids would be bailing out of it. It was just a family doing this for their livelihoods. They probably didn't even report taxes. They lived under the system, selling whatever it was that they sold. So that's the way life has been through history for most entrepreneurial business activity, turning resources into something someone will buy. That's it. But then there's the formal one called the corporation, and I'll come back to that in just a little bit here. But know this. The process of being productive is down the road, we're going to talk about that. Being productive, making money in the productivity. Matter of fact, during this course, I will actually show you in one lecture how you can become millionaires. I'm not even kidding. I can show you how it's done and how a lot of the millionaires in the United States became that way through this one process. I'll show you how to do that. So there's that wonderful thing that's coming in the class. Of course, you could also become so poor you play handball on the curb, but one way or the other, it's there are ways to become productive, make a lot of money, or to be ruined in that money. But the one thing that is about whatever you do, the bills come first, your liabilities. Whether it is informal or formal, you must satisfy your debt holders before the owner, you or the group of owners, can claim a dime. In other words, the liabilities have prior claim. The equity has the residual claim, if there is any. You, sir, decide that you are going to start a lawn mowing business. You change your name to Earl so you can call it Earl's Lawn Mowing Business. But of course, that's not enough because there's really not such a thing as business. It's business, okay? If you really want to do business, you say business. Earl's Lawn Mowing Business. And you mow lawns with a big Toro zero turn. You got yourself a truck and you got yourself some pruning shears and you mow lawns for rich people. Well, one day you're mowing this rich lady's lawn and you run over her $20,000 poodle. Uh-huh. Day, day, day! And what happens after that? She's going to sue you. You gave that dog a show dog trim, and she's going to sue you. Now, she will take your lawnmower, she will take your truck, your prize pruning shears. And that added up to about $3,000. So that $20,000 dog, she's going to take your mobile home that you just got upgraded with one of the skirts around it and your Velvet Elvis paintings and that special chair with the vibro massage for your back. She'll take those. You see, the bill holders can destroy you. The shareholders, the owners, all they can do is cry. Because those bill holders can take everything you own. They can shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mom and dad wear furry costumes that please them. Yes, I just brought up furries in a finance class. Understand that. It is nasty out there, and the debt holders come first. And then the owners come after that. That's the way business works. It's just the reality of it, and it is compelling, because what that means, down the road in this course, we will see that stockholders expect a higher return on their investment in equity than debt holders do for their investments in bonds. Because bonds are safer, because they have prior claim. Stocks are riskier, so they have the residual claim to the cash flows of the corporation. Now, let me get down to finance as a subject. Most of you are not finance majors. You are something like accounting, marketing, human resources, sales, management. In other words, you are in an inferior field. Now, I will make jokes about marketing people because you guys aren't going to have jobs, but the accounting people, I'll come after you because you will have jobs and they'll pay you a lot of money. Understand that there are some incorrect descriptions of finance as accounting. We are not accounting at all. Accountants are not, we can't really rely on accounting numbers. We use them, but we have to fix them because accounting looks at the past, historical. And in finance, we are all about valuation, which is all about what's going to happen. The past means nothing to us unless we're looking for like patterns of behavior or things like that. The past is irrelevant to what we do, which brings us to where the difference really lies in accounting. For one thing, accountants use historical costs. They have to. They have to have a receipt for something that has happened. We can't care about that. Another part of it that is absolutely critical to our understanding is that accounting uses sunk costs. You see, sunk costs are costs that have already happened. Several of my consulting jobs. What I did, one of my specializations, I would come in, there were these players who would capture dead corporations that were listed on Pink Sheet Stock Exchange at OTC. And then they would take over the majority of shares, and then they would go and sell that majority of shares to a private company and insert it into the dead public company. So it came to life without going through the SEC's process of going public. It was a trick. It was called reverse merger. And it worked. The problem, though, was, well, there were a lot of problems. But the problem was that, you know, these people really weren't ready to be a public company. At this one meeting, this guy, the president / CEO, we were talking about going forward with a project. I had just gotten involved with the company as a consultant. And I was at this meeting, and they were discussing whether they were going to spend the $2.5 million to finish this project. And the president / CEO said, well, we've already spent a couple of million on this project, so I don't think there's any question. Well, yeah, that $2 million is irrelevant. It's not there. All that matters is whether or not the new investment of $2.5 million is going to have an adequate return on investment for the risk of putting it in. That money before is irrelevant, absolutely. This is a dominant problem that we have in common thinking, that money that has already been spent has some meaning. You, sir, come to me. I bought $100 worth of stock last year, and now it's worth $10. And I say, well, what do you want to do? And you say, well, I'm going to keep that until I get my $100 back. Well, do you know where that $100 is? Yeah, it's with Jesus. It's gone. Forever. There's no $100. It is not there at all. All that's there is $10, and what you are going to decide, buy more of the stock, hold on your position, or just bail, having to do with what's going to happen from here on out. You can cry about what's already happened, but you can't go back and get it. Go from where you are, learn your lesson, have your regrets. And I have regrets, lots of them. I won't talk about those. But you understand sunk cost is bad news. Another thing, here's where accountants look at sunk cost, historical cost. Where accountants don't look, which is the dominant cost that we have to consider, is opportunity cost. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. In other words, it's not money that goes out of your pocket, it's the money that does not come into your pocket. You, madam, you're not a finance major, are you? Well, good, because I'm going to turn you to the dark side, and you are going to become a finance major. And there at the graduation, I'm one of those professors who sits in the black robes looking at you. Scally, you are so unworthy of these degrees. But then, oh, God, my babies are leaving. And we made sure that you got secured with a good job at State Barn, and you're making $60,000 a year. And there you are at that graduation, and you take off in your car, and the last I see of you, you're waving to me, bye, professor, and you disappear. 2 years later, you come to my office. Oh, hi. I can't remember your name. My God, dementia setting in. But you got a job at State Barn for $60,000. You're probably advanced there and all that. You know, I'm so proud of you. Oh, no, Professor C. When I left that graduation, I had an epiphany. A what? An epiphany. Well, did you see a doctor? No. I realized I did not want to spend my life working at State Barn in a corporate cubicle. I decided to start my own business. You what? Yes, Professor C. My dream was to start a donut shop. You what? And I just got my first full year's financial statements back from my accountant. I made a profit of $20,000, Professor C. What do you think? You know what I'm going to say to you? You dumbass. You didn't make $20,000. You lost $40,000. Do you understand that? You didn't make any $20,000. You lost $40,000 because you gave up $60,000 to make a lousy $20,000. Woman, you go out there and burn that donut shop down. Oh, bring me the donuts. Let's not get radical here. We're capitalists. You know, bring me them donuts. The French crullers, those are delicious. Do you understand that in the real world, we do not ignore opportunity costs? Sooner or later, I ran businesses, several, where there was finally some night where I got a phone call. Ring, ring, hello. You know who it was from? It was from Clueville. Clueville saying, get a clue. You are not making as much doing this as you would doing something else. I'm pretty thick in the head. It took me maybe 5 years in one case before I realized I am barely making payroll. I am overjoyed when I have enough money after I've written the payroll checks to go to Denny's and get a Grand Slam. That's Grand Slam with the scrambled eggs. It is to die for. It is, okay, focus. Stay on task, okay. Now, you understand opportunity cost drives economic decision making. We don't give, actually, those direct costs are minimal in some cases. Look around you. Have you ever noticed that you go to a place like Target, or Schnucks, the prices are higher there. If I go to Walmart, they have low, low prices. Full disclosure, I'm a Walmart hoe, okay? You'll see me there, okay? eBay, too. Listen, at Schnucks, you don't stand in a line. At Target, unless it's you fools coming there last night, whatever, you know, it was just ridiculous in there. You know, I'm fighting through. All I wanted was my cat, some cat food, and, you know, fighting through the you people. But generally, small lines, efficient, clean stores. Let me tell you about Walmart. First of all, you're probably going to park in another county to get in. You're going to walk through a parking lot where some prairie hillbilly in a truck almost runs you over, and when you see his back bumper, there's a bumper sticker that says, my wife, yes, my dog, maybe, my gun, never. Then you're going to walk in the place, and you're going to hear someone, hi, welcome to Walmart. And you look, oh, God, they're hiring midgets now as greeters. You walk down the aisle, they're right in the middle of the aisle. This fat ass, honey, what do you want for dinner tonight? Move, you cow. And then you go and you have to stand in a long, long line. The people in front, right in front of you, kid with his finger in his nose staring at you while his mom looks at Cosmo and waiting in the line. At the front is Grandpa, clear up there in the front. He's trying a debit card for the first time. Well, that was 12 times it didn't work. Grandpa, quit it. Go home, eat. You're going to die soon. You put up with that for the low prices, the opportunity cost of time in the line, what we call the queue. But if you don't have much of a life, if you make low wages, that line is cheap to you. But to a wealthier person, middle, upper middle class, upper class, that line is extremely expensive to you. When I was running with this really wealthy crowd, we went to Disney. I never had any idea. They had some kind of a membership so that we went down under to get to the front of the lines for the rides. Well, all of the rednecks and hillbillies all stood for 2 hours in the rotisserie of the Florida sun. We got to the front, but it cost a huge amount of money, but it was worth it because the opportunity cost of our time. When we were on the job, we could be literally, in some cases, an hour could be $50,000. Yeah, we're going to pay $5,000 for a pass for that. Look at the same thing with kids who play hours and hours of online games. Why? Because their opportunity cost of time is so low. They barely could make minimum wage if they can even get a job. So, of course, they're going to waste their lives like that. Look at poor people. Well, they commit more crime. Bruh, they have more, they don't make very much money, so time in prison for them doesn't mean as much in terms of economic incentive as it would for a rich person who will still break laws but have great lawyers so he doesn't go. You understand, opportunity cost drives decision making. That's the whole thing about it, is that accountants cannot, by generally accepted accounting principles, recognize that profound cost. Years ago, here in this town, I was teaching at another university. It was a university, a private school, where all the kids, looked really preppy and goody-two-shoes. Of course, at night they went and they got themselves baked on weed and they got smashed and blotted, but they knew how to pretend they were good kids and all that, better than public school, public university kids. And so we had all these special speakers come to talk to them about special topics. And at that time, the mayor of that era here in the Bloomington Normal area was a lady who had as her dream, what would be her legacy, a sports arena here in town. Never mind the fact that sports arenas almost never work for towns. They end up bleeding the town until the town finally screams after 10, 20 years, enough. And then the hustlers from Chicago, New York, and LA, who talked them into it, come in and buy the stadium at pennies on the dollar and make a profit. Well, here we were at the beginning of that whole thing. And she was going to speak to all of the business students about this project. She even brought along her financial analyst guy, weaselly little guy she had on a chain. Come, boy, sit. And she talked, and the bankers who were behind this talked. Nowhere in that crowd were the hustlers from Chicago who had sold them on this bill of goods. They knew where it would go. But she talked, and then her financial guy, he wanted to show the finance students, my students, here's how you do a real financial analysis, whether a project is a go or a no-go. He showed the revenues, and he showed the costs, ran them down, projecting the years out in the pro forma financial statement format. Well, first of all, his revenue projections were ridiculous. He was projecting that this arena that they were planning to build its market would be a 60-mile radius of Bloomington. Oh, who am I kidding? Of Bloomington. Now, 60 miles, a radius of target market of 60 miles. You know what is within 60 miles of this dream arena? The Peoria Civic Center. You know what else is in the rest of this area around there? Corn and cows. And Prairie Hillbilly Farmers. Yeah, there's going to be some kind of a show at the Bloomington Civic Center. I hear it's Insane Clown Posse. Don't know what they are, but they say they got a gathering afterwards. Yeah, you go to that, Grandpa. No, there's not going to be that kind of revenue. They're not going to be selling a ticket to every fifth household in that area. And this Peoria Civic Center, it will be the draw. There, it's a venue that would not be defeatable by something in Bloomington Normal. Okay? It's just not going to be there. Okay, that was the revenue, just madness. But then on the cost side, he went down through the costs, and he asked the students, he said, do you have any questions? And, of course, all they wanted to do was leave. And I held up my hand. I said, where is the cost of the land? And he said, oh, we own the land. You own the land. Well, did you ever learn about opportunity cost? You see, if you didn't use the land for this arena, you could have sold it. Or you could have leased it out for something else. You see, it is still a cost even if you own it. It doesn't matter. The ownership is a cost to a project. So he had left out one of the major cost factors because he thought you don't include it if you already own it, not realizing that you could have sold it and made money off it. So of course it's a cost. It's a foregone alternative. And in economics, we have to pay attention to that. That's how it works in economics. We can't, and in finance, which is a subdiscipline of economics, we have to look forward, cold and fearless. We can't close our eyes to something just because it's bad news. And that's unfortunate. Closing your eyes is one of the best ways to die. Good example. I created and run a club for finance students here, and economics students, the Business Association of Economics and Finance. What I also created and run is a club for ghost hunters. Yes, it's called the founding members called it the Paranormal Hunters. And they said, get it, Professor C? Paranormal. We're in normal Illinois. I thought, I'm in hell. But we went. This one guy, tall, muscular guy, he was in the club. They started having some activity. He just closed his eyes, you know? Don't close your eyes. And finally, he just, I thought he was going to crap his pants. He left. Said something about FTS and ran. But you close your eyes, that's not going to make it go away. If it's a demon, it's still going to possess you, and you're going to say, hey, I want to eat a dog's leg. It's not going to do any good if you pretend that the Chinese aren't there waiting to take every market we have. It's not going to help if you pretend that an opportunity cost is not a real cost. It's going to happen, whether you like it or not. And, of course, what happens? We now have that arena has been bleeding red blood ink year after year after year. And now finally we're going to, sooner or later, Clouville is going to call and say, get a hold of those hustlers. It's theirs. At least we got something out of it. Lesson learned. You see, that's why you can't ignore costs. And you can't have a pie in the sky. You would not believe the number of places. When I go start a consulting gig with some little startup company, okay, tell me about your product. That was always a way that they could, you know, feel proud and tell me about and be honest, because I'd be agreeing with them, yes, this does sound good. And almost inevitably, they'd say, this is going to sell like hotcakes. It's going to sell right off the bat, a million units first year. No, it's not. It's going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and it's going to, probably you won't make it. You'll be eaten alive by your cost before you get off the ground. I won't be able to find you angel investors or anything. And probably if you got a really good technology, it's going to be taken away from you, knocked off, or stolen. You're going to go away. You would not believe. In the 1990s, I've got three examples of things that were just like out of science fiction at that time that are now products that you guys have in the 21st century. They just were ahead of their time, and they didn't have the ability to get people to open their minds to this as a possibility in that era. So, yeah, brilliance. You think you're going to sell a million units? Think again. Get real. You're going to crawl up, and if there's any way possible, you're going to be able to do the marketing to get at least a foothold and you're not going to get someone too interested to come in and knock off your product before you've got some market share and you can begin to have some, at least, brand loyalty. But anyway, that's part of it too there. All of these come together and they fit like a puzzle into what we do in finance. We are more of the philosophers that think about what the numbers tell us. What do they mean? What are the right decisions to make? We can't. I took my students in my finance club up to an investment banking house and trading firm and brokerage house in Chicago last spring. And there was this very powerful, very well-paid analyst who spoke to the students about he would recommend that the company buy these stocks, sell these stocks, and what investments this big brokerage house and investment house would do. And he said, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm right 35% of the time. But when I'm right, I make the company a huge amount of money. So we don't have to be right all the time. We don't even have to be right half the time. But when we're wrong, we qualify and warn that we cover our butts, that we could be wrong. And when we are right, we are so right. And that's what we do in finance. Welcome to my world. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.